Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, every now and then we have, I guess it's a theme on the show that I call Dog Days, which is a show in which we look at some aspect of dog behavior or living with dogs, because a whole lot of us out there have dogs and love dogs, right? So my guest this week is an associate professor of evolutionary anthropology at Duke University. He's Dr. Brian Hare. He's also the founder of something called the Duke Canine Cognition Center, and is the author, with his wife, Vanessa Woods, also at Duke, of the best-selling book, The Genius of Dogs. They also operate together a website called Dognition. It's a scientific research project that also helps owners identify the areas of intelligence in their dogs and kind of gives a personality profile of the dogs, and we'll talk about that a lot in this show. So for dog owners, this kind of thing is always interesting stuff. You know, how much do your dogs understand about us and vice versa? How much do we really understand about them? So, you know, they're a different species, and to some extent it's like dealing with an extraterrestrial. I mean, you love them and they you, but there's definitely a communication gap, right? So people are also interested in how smart are their dogs compared to other breeds or to other dogs of the same breed. You know, like humans, they vary within the breed as well as across breeds, right? So what does smart really mean in a dog? Is it just a facile ability to understand what we want and do it effectively? And how important is that compared to other traits like affection and empathy and adaptability and other things that we value other than the ability to jump through hoops very cleverly, right? So that's what we're going to talk about today, centered around the Dognition website or game site. I'm not sure how to describe it exactly, but Brian, can I call you Brian?
Yeah, that's no problem, and thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks so much for being on. I think this is going to be real interesting. In fact, we'll do two shows, because this is going to be one of those that's something we can't really do justice to in half an hour. This one's focused on Dognition, and another show we'll do later will be focused on your book, which, as I said, is called The Genius of Dogs. So first, to start off, Brian, what do you do at the Canine Cognition Center there at Duke University?
Oh, well, we're really lucky. We have about 1,500 local pet owners who bring their dogs to Duke, and undergraduates play games with the dogs. We look at the choices dogs make in those games, and based on the choices they make, we make inferences about what they're thinking, how they think, and sometimes how they don't think. So we really use an approach that's very similar to what people use when they study human infants. You know, people will bring their children in and study how they think, and we do the exact same thing.
Do the owners participate in those tests and games with you there at the center?
Often. It depends on the game we're playing. I mean, some of the games are about the relationship that the dog has with its owner, so there we need them. And then sometimes we want the owner to be out of the room because the question we're asking is about how a dog solves a problem without their owner or even without anyone else there. So it just depends on the question we're asking, but sometimes they play, sometimes they don't.
So is this a kind of like a big romper room setup with a lot of students and lots of dogs and some degree of chaos, sort of like a nursery in a sense? I mean, I'm trying to picture what the environment there is like.
Yeah. So really we just have one dog at a time. And what we do is we contact people on our list that we have, and we call in advance, and then we have a place for people to park, and they bring their dog. And then there's actually, we don't have that big of a space. It's really just a regular old room, and we got some cameras in the ceilings, et cetera, so we can videotape what's going on. And most of the games are run by undergraduates. Now, we have graduate students who lead the projects as part of their PhD, but, you know, when you come in, who you're probably interacting with is an undergraduate. And it's really great because one of our goals is to get young people excited about this type of science and give undergraduates opportunities. So, you know, because we have the ability to study dogs, you know, we've got some freshmen and some sophomores who immediately are getting to, you know, really participate in real science. So it's great fun to see those kids get excited.
So what you're doing there is research, obviously, and I would call it animal behavior research. It's interesting, you're an evolutionary anthropologist, and I think of anthropology as being the study of early humans and how they evolved or developed into modern humans through stages. So what's the connection between evolutionary anthropology and your dog research?
Yeah, we are probably the only evolutionary anthropology department in the United States that has a dog center. But the reason we have the Duke Canine Cognition Center and evolutionary anthropology department is because dogs evolved at least 15,000 years ago, maybe as much as 40,000 years ago, and they've been together with us ever since. And they've been a big part of our evolution in the last 15,000 years. So there's lots that we can learn from dogs and our relationship with dogs that's actually relevant to thinking about human evolution. And so the reason that we study dogs is because they're a wonderful species to study if you want to understand humans.
Well, as my wife often says, and I've heard other women say this, all men are dogs, so maybe there's some real and natural connection there. So the work you do at the Canine Cognition Center is really research. And then how is it connected to your website, Dognition, which is, to me, some hybrid between research and, game playing, kind of a site that that people could go to evaluate their own characteristics. How does the research feed into Dognition?
So at Duke, we do conventional research where we ask questions and we have different hypotheses we test, so ideas or answers for those questions. And then we publish our results in peer-reviewed scientific papers. And, we debate with our colleagues about how dogs think and what our findings might mean relative to other people's findings. And it's pretty much regular, good old traditional science. What's exciting for dog lovers is that basically science had long ignored the dog. And in the last 10 years, people have woken up and realized that dogs are remarkable and incredibly important to study. And there's lots of scientists getting excited right now about using dogs to answer all sorts of questions about dogs themselves and about even people. And of course, there are many applications for all that research since dogs do so many things in our world, whether it's just be our pet or help people with disabilities or help protect Marines by detecting bombs or, helping protect you when you go to the airport. So there are all sorts of reasons why studying dogs is really important and interesting. So Dognition has basically taken the best of the discoveries that have been made in the last 10 years. It's hard to believe this is the case, but it really is that in the last 10 years, we've really learned more about dog psychology than the previous 100 from a scientific perspective. And so we've taken a lot of the discoveries over the last 10 years and we've boiled them down for you so that you can play many of the games that have been published in the scientific literature to understand dog psychology, dog intelligence. You can play the exact same games, and you enter what your dog does as you play these games on your iPad or on your iPhone or on your desktop computer, whatever vehicle you use to interface with our website. You enter what they do, and then when you're finished, you instantly get a 15-page report that explains to you what it all means. And the most important thing to understand is that what we learn from animal cognition is it's not that there's one type of intelligence. There's actually lots of types of intelligence. And so that's what Dognition helps you measure. Dognition does not, it's not about finding out is your dog smart or not. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion your dog is a genius. The question is, what is the strategy your dog is using to make it a genius? So just as an example, is your dog one that's highly empathic? Is your dog one that has an amazing memory? Is your dog one that's capable of reasoning? Is your dog one that's incredibly communicative? Or maybe what makes your dog really special is it's really cunning. So Dognition helps you measure all of those different abilities with real games that are designed to really help you understand and measure this in a valid way. It's bigger than that, though, because as you said, it seems like it's science, but wait, what is this? So not only do you get to learn about your own dog and what are the strategies your own dog is using to solve problems in the world and then enrich your relationship as a result, but you're contributing to a citizen science project. And citizen science is actually a very well-known concept where people, just normal citizens, collect data. And because so many people collect the data, it provides a massive amount of information that any individual scientist or even a group of scientists could never collect on their own. And when you have a citizen science project, in many cases, you can answer a whole host of questions that absolutely would be impossible to answer any other way. And the beauty of all this is you find out about your dog, but then because you help the citizen science effort, then we can provide everybody, including you, with all sorts of new discoveries about how dogs think, and we all benefit, including our dogs, as a result.
Well, it sounds like an amazing innovation. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Professor Brian Hare, who is an anthropologist at Duke University, who studies canine cognition. And in particular, we're talking about a website that he and his wife, Vanessa Woods, also at Duke, run called Dognition. And you can go to look at it, even if you're at your computer while you're listening to this. You can go to dognition.com. It's just spelled like it sounds, dog, N-I-T-I-O-N, Dognition. It's set up with icons that makes it very easy to access and get into. And it looks like a game, but you're really doing, as Brian said, you're doing citizen science. It's kind of like crowdsourcing in a way. So they're collecting data from you and your interaction with the site at the same time as you're gaining information about what I would call a personality profile of your dog in a kind of a three-dimensional way. It's not just a dog IQ test, as Brian was describing a minute ago, but it measures all kinds of characteristics. And I've gone through it. I haven't had the time yet to actually do the game and go through it in detail with one of our dogs, but I hope to do that at some point. So can anyone participate? It sounds like it's open to anyone who wants to who has a dog, right?
Yeah, so what happened was when we opened the Duke Canine Cognition Center, we had such an outpouring of enthusiasm that it became obvious that, wait a second, we only can serve 1,500 people. And we had people from New York, we had people from California, we had people from Alaska, we had people from Brazil writing to us and saying, please let us bring our dog to Duke. And, you know, first of all, we want to discourage people flying their dogs just for coming to do our games here at Duke, number one. And then number two is it made us realize, wait a second, we need to find a way to give anybody the opportunity to do this, not just people that are close to Duke or close to another university with a canine cognition center. So myself and a bunch of other people who are sort of the top minds in animal cognition, we came up with this idea for Dognition so that anybody can participate. You just need a dog, and you need to be excited about learning about how they think. And if you're one of those people, then probably Dognition's for you.
How many people have participated in Dognition to date?
Oh, well, we've had thousands. I don't know the exact number right now, but I can tell you many, many thousands. And, you know, well over 12,000, 13,000 last time I looked at the data.
Wow. And I'm sure people out there ask themselves, is it free or is there a fee to play the game, so to speak?
Yeah, so the way that it works is there is a free start option, so you can try it out for free. But then if you decide you want to go on and finish it and get your report, it costs $40. You know, it's like an expensive bag of dog food or a dog toy. But instead of it lasting, you know, for a month or a few days, it lasts the rest of the dog's life. So, you know, if you really want to understand your dog better, this is the way to go, because taking my own dog as an example, I tried to predict what he would do on these different games. So my prediction was he would not have so much empathy relative to other dogs, because the key thing that Dognition does is when you submit your data, the way it generates a report is it compares your dog's data that you enter to all the other dogs in our database, and it tells you where does your dog sit relative to all these other thousands of dogs we've measured. And so that's how you know what makes your dog special. Because obviously, if you want to figure out why your dog does what it does or what makes it special, well, you have to compare it to something. And so that's how we help you, is we can compare your dog to all these other dogs. So when I did my dog, I tried to predict what he would do. Is this a dog that has a lot of empathy? Well, I didn't think so. Is it a dog that's communicative? I thought he would be super communicative relative to other dogs. And then, you know, I went through and tried to make different predictions. And on those two in particular, I was absolutely dead wrong. He was super high on empathy relative to other dogs. And he wasn't particularly remarkable in terms of his communicative skills. So I didn't even know my own dog living in my house, sleeping in my bed.
And you're a dog expert, so that's interesting.
And I do this for a living. So that's the fun thing, is that, you know, you're going to know your dog better. And the only way you can see how a dog thinks is to give them challenges and to use tests that are designed to measure things we care about. and to then learn about them and know them better. So that's what Dognition helps you do in a really rigorous way. And not only are you going to learn about your own dog, but you're helping everybody make discoveries, because, you know, our mission is to make interesting discoveries and then share them with the world.
That is so cool. I can't wait to actually try it. But how long does it take on average to go through this whole series of tests?
It depends on your dog, but I think in general people are taking their time and they kind of break it up. So it's kind of like you do it for 30 minutes over a few weekends, and it gives you sort of a little fun activity in the morning first thing or whenever. Maybe it's raining and you do it because it's a great thing to do inside. And I think the other thing that people are doing to great effect is they're using it with kids who, you know, might otherwise be playing video games or whatever. They're using it with kids to sort of give them an introduction to what science is and that they can actually participate right now in science in a way that's fun. And, you know, they don't even have to know that it's science. But, you know, you can get people really excited about the idea that, wait a second, we can do these games and we can answer questions about how our dog thinks. That's so fun. So we've had so many, you know, middle school and high school kids get excited about this and start learning what science is.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of science fairs and science projects in science fairs across the country that have Dognition-based projects. Have you heard feedback from any such things?
We've got lots of museums and classes, et cetera, that are starting to use Dognition. Because the thing is, there's a misconception about science. The misconception is that science is hard. And that is not what unifies all of science. What unifies science is it's powerful. It's a powerful way to answer questions, and it's generally really fun because you make discoveries about things that nobody knew before. But the misconception's there because I think when we think of science, we think of some areas of science that really are hard. But there are other types of science that are really easy and accessible, and the methodology is very straightforward and anybody could do it. That doesn't mean it's not powerful. In fact, it's just as powerful as, you know, methods that are really complicated to learn.
Particle physics or organic chemistry or whatever, yeah.
Exactly. But the good thing is that because they're accessible, people can then have an introduction to that, you know, really addictive phenomenon of making a discovery. And once you learn, oh my gosh, this is really powerful and fun, well, then you could think about, do you want to do one of these more challenging things? But I think if we're teaching kids in particular, the first lesson about science is you have to have a PhD and it's really hard and it's something you're going to do later. Well, that's not a very exciting, you know, introduction to anything. So I think if we can reverse that and say, look, the first thing is it's exciting and addictive to make discoveries, I think then you're going to have people who are going to work really hard to potentially, you know, go up that mountain if they want to do sciences that are harder.
So, Brian, once somebody has taken the entire Dognition test, describe the output. I mean, they get a profile of some sort of the dog's cognitive style. So just describe briefly what they get as an output.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing to know is that all of our data is freely available online right now. If you go to our website and you click on where it says explore the data, you can actually ask questions to our database about what different breeds are like in terms of how they solve problems. Are there differences in dogs of different ages? Are there differences whether they're spayed or neutered? Are there differences in terms of even where they are? So it's a lot of fun. That is one thing we already can provide to everybody to go look at what their dog does. Now, when you get your profile, what it does is when you're exploring the data there, you can then look at your dog relative to other dogs. So your report just basically goes through and explains to you why we helped you do the test that we enabled you to do, and what your dog's results mean relative to other dogs, and even relative to other animals, whether it be a chimpanzee or a rat or a human infant. And so, you know, by the end of the report, the goal is to help you understand, relative to other dogs, here's where your dog is really special. And a lot of people are finding that that information is very useful in whether it's training their dog or just understanding their dog and appreciating them better.
Sure, I can understand that. Well, again, I look forward to doing it myself, and I hope that a lot of people out there listening to us will go to Dognition.com and take the test themselves and their dog or dogs. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Brian Hare, a dog cognitive researcher at Duke University, in particular about Dognition.com and the kind of gaming site that he set up. to do citizen science online. So what have you learned so far? Kind of a nutshell, I mean, just sort of briefly, the 30,000-foot level findings that you've learned that you wouldn't have found out otherwise without Doug.
Well, I think some of the fun stuff we've learned is we found some differences between mixed-breed dogs and purebred dogs. And I think it really highlights the whole approach that this isn't about our dogs or is an individual dog smart or not. It's what are the strategies dogs rely on. So in the case of purebreds, what we found is they're really reliant on communicative gestures more than mixed breeds. It's not that mixed breeds don't use gestures and they're actually really good at it, but purebreds are even better and more reliant. But then when you go and look at the memory test that we ran, it's the exact opposite finding. Mixed breeds are really amazing relative to purebreds at solving the memory problems. And again, the purebreds are great with the memory problems, but the mixed breeds are just even better. So that's the type of discovery that we just absolutely would not be able to make without this citizen science approach.
That's interesting. Have you looked into the phenomenon of dogs that can watch TV and understand what they're looking at versus those that seem to see just flickering colors on a two-dimensional flat surface? I mean, we've had a number of dogs, and some of them can see every aspect of what's going on TV, but they focus on the animals. Even if it's a cartoon animation of an exaggerated version of a squirrel in the background of the scene or whatever, they will immediately go on alert and attention to watch that. Other dogs will stare at them like, what's your problem? Why are you looking at that? And then not appear to see anything on the TV at all. It seems to me there's a distinct capability that some dogs have and some dogs don't, and there's no gray area. The dogs that have it don't seem to be blurry or fuzzy about it. They're very keyed to that. It seems like there's a part of their brain that's either turned on or turned off. Have you all looked at that at all?
Well, this is a great example of the limitations of science, because I can't go to the federal government and ask for a grant to study why some dogs can see squirrels on TV and others cannot. I just will not get a grant from the federal government to do that. And that's the importance of citizen science, because there are lots of questions that we have about our dogs that I, as a scientist, and no scientist in the world is ever going to be able to get a grant from a government to ask or answer. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they're not fantastic questions. I mean, what makes a Chihuahua different from a Great Dane? That's a really cool question, but I'm never going to get a grant for that. So that's the importance of citizen science, and that's the whole point of Dognition. Is there are all sorts of questions that dog lovers and dog owners want to know the answers to that scientists normally won't be able to answer just because of the way the funding works. Dognition changes that whole formula, because now, because dog lovers are learning about their own dog, providing data about their dogs, we can start answering questions that we never knew the answer to before. And not only that, but you can write into Dognition and say, hey, I really want to know the answer to this question. Can you design something for citizen science to tackle this question? And then we can move forward.
Well, for anybody out there in our listening audience who happens to be on the board of a family foundation that conceivably could stretch to cover these kinds of questions, get in touch with Brian Hare at the Duke Canine Cognition Center, www.dukedogs.com, and see how you can help. There's a pitch for you. So, all right, so on average, how much do you find that people understand about their dogs when you talk with them, the 1,500 people who've been through the center and then the tens of thousands who've taken the Dognition series or whatever? I mean, are humans smarter about their dogs than the dogs are smart about us, or vice versa on average? Do you know?
Well, I can tell you what I think. People understand their dogs really well in general, but I can tell you where people are surprised. I think where people are really surprised, you know, one concrete example is there are games where you put different cognitive abilities in competition. And this is one of the things that you do in Dognition. I think that, you know, one of the most exciting things to think about is that there are different types of intelligence, not just one. And one of the best illustrations of that is when you have two of these types of intelligence competing against each other. So an example would be that I show a dog where I hide food in one of two places. So it's not on the left, it's on the right. I showed them it's on the right, and they can potentially remember that it's on the right. But then what happens when I point to the left? So now I'm communicating to them it's over there, trying to help them. Well, normally when I gesture to them, well, I'm being honest, but now I'm actually pointing to the wrong location. So now they have social information, communicative information that's telling them to do one thing, and they have their memory telling them to do another. And the question about your dog is, what is the type of information that your dog prefers to rely on. Some dogs are very memory reliant, and then there are other dogs that are so reliant on your communication that they're going to listen to you even though they just saw where the food was. And I think that's where it's really fun and exciting, is there's no way that you can know what your dog would do in these contexts and how your dog compares to other dogs without having Dognition to help you figure it out.
Hmm. So until recently, I think that most animal behaviorists, this is my perception of it, didn't think that dogs experience more complex emotions like guilt and shame and amusement and embarrassment. But it's obvious to me as a longtime dog owner that they do, and probably to most people who are longtime dog owners, but I sometimes wonder whether some researchers just examine and watch dogs in a lab setting where they're inhibited or whatever. But what do you think about that, the more complex set of emotions other than fear and hunger?
Well, here's the thing about science. What makes science different from everything else is you have to be ready to be wrong. In fact, you have to kind of enjoy being wrong. It's kind of a very strange exercise. What makes science different from everything else is if you have an idea about something, so you said dogs experience remorse and guilt and all these other things, you have to find a way to falsify that idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's what science is. It has to be that you say, okay, I think dogs experience remorse and I think they experience guilt. And here's a way for me to prove that that's wrong. Because if I can try to show that it's wrong, but I'm unable to show that it's wrong, then it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how science works. And unfortunately, in the case of things like remorse and guilt, nobody has really been clever enough to come up with a way to potentially show that that's false. And because there hasn't been a way to show that it's false, we can't really say that it's true. So from a scientific perspective, I would just say we don't know. Now, this is where you have to understand that scientists are people too. Because when I tell you that I can't tell you that there's any evidence for it, I'm not saying that it's not true or that it doesn't exist. I'm just trying to say I have no scientific evidence. And so as a person, you know, I experience my relationship with my dog very similar to anybody else. So I have suspicions and observations that, you know, are consistent with what other people are experiencing. But as a scientist, I have to put my science hat on and I have to say, okay, how can I falsify my hypothesis that dogs experience remorse and guilt? And until somebody comes up with a clever way to do that, we're stuck not really knowing.
You know, it's funny from the standpoint of let's say, intelligent lay people, especially when you're looking at the more accessible sciences, as you described it earlier, like psychology, a lot of times scientists appear to wear blinders because they seem to be blind to things that are quite obvious over time to intelligent people. And I think that's because of the rigor of science, and it may be that the scientists themselves know that they're intentionally blind, but unless something is proven and then confirmed by a battery of other esteemed scientists, it's not accepted. So there's kind of a disconnect there. But it's great what you're doing, and I think what you're doing is moving dog behavior science into the you're broadening it, you're pushing the envelope, and you're moving it way farther into the sphere of what intelligent observers see, and you're proving why things are the way they are. You know, I think we're going to have to leave it there, Brian, because it's a short show, and this is a subject we could talk for an hour about. But as I mentioned earlier, we are going to have a second show that's focused on your book called The Genius of Dogs. Again, dognition.com, and you can go to dukedogs.com to see what's going on at the Canine Cognition Center there. You can also buy the book anywhere. It's out in paperback now. Brian Hare, I appreciate so much your being on with us today.
Oh, it's great fun. Thank you so much, Court.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.